Yes, Steven Silton back in studio. He's a jet setter back in town. He made it into studio, and he's hanging out with us here on The Lake Show. Happy to have you back on this cold evening.
Yes.
You got your big boy winter coat on tonight.
Yeah, my wool hat. I got a wool. It's a wool baseball hat. How do you like that?
I like it.
Yeah.
You're very fashionable. Everybody knows that,
I
man.
I do my best. I do my best.
All right, so we got plenty of things that we'll dive into here for as long as you want to hang out and stay.
I'm here.
But I wanted to start with, because I said this to you last week, because I haven't had an attorney in studio to talk about the Drake stuff. Now, people understand that Drake is one of the biggest pop stars, hip-hop rappers for the last 15 years or so, 20 years. Big time. Now he's ambassador for the Toronto Raptors and all this other stuff, right? He's involved in a lot of different things. Massively popular. And he ended up getting into a rap battle with Kendrick Lamar. Kendrick Lamar, a rapper out of Compton, California, the best hip-hop artist right now in the world. It's him.
He's coming to town soon.
I got tickets. Forget about Drake's success over the last 16, 17 years, whatever. Right now, currently, there's no bigger star than Kendrick Lamar. Kendrick Lamar is performing at the Super Bowl. All right, it's Kendrick Lamar. He is the halftime show this year. That tells you how big Kendrick Lamar is. But what happened is, middle of last year, in May to be exact, they've had a back and forth a little bit before. Kendrick Lamar does not like Drake. There's stuff that he clearly knows about Drake. They used to be okay because they did some music together. But I think that there's something happened behind the scenes where I think that Kendrick Lamar saw Drake as being a phony, and I think he saw some unsavory things about Drake, and he says, I don't want to be around this guy. I don't want to deal with this guy. He's not a good dude. And so knowing that, he put out a song, I'm giving you a little bit of background, called Control years ago. It's a Control verse where he's taking shots at everybody in the industry. Now, if people understand the nature of hip-hop and rap, is that battling and claiming that you're the best and being braggadocious, that's a part of hip-hop, right? You know that. Everybody's been there, done that. There's been hip-hop battles. Kumo D and LL Cool J, Jay-Z, Nas. There's been a million different rap battles. This is no different. He boasted and bragged about how he was the best in the game. Well, Drake allegedly got super sensitive about that. Right. And kind of was talking to people in the industry and taking shots at Kendrick Lamar. So they were never on good terms after that. So then fast forward to this year. In May, Kendrick Lamar does a verse on a popular record called Like That, which was Future Metro Boomin, where he takes shots at J. Cole and Drake. And so then after that, J. Cole came out with a diss track against him, because now we're in a battle, right? And 2 days after the track was released, he deleted it and said, I don't want to be a part of this. That's my brother. I really love Kendrick Lamar. He's a good dude, whatever. I'm not beefing with him, whatever. And the word on the street, funny I say word on the street, the word on the street is that there were some people well-known in the industry that said, hey, yo, Jay, slide to the side, because this is about to be on between Kendrick and Drake. So what happens next is Drake comes back at Kendrick. Kendrick comes back at him. There's a back and forth. And then Kendrick Lamar just unloads on Drake and puts back-to-back tracks together in 24 hours, less than 24 hours, and the beef is over. Like, it's over. He's crushed them. The entire situation is deadened because he gave him the kill shot. And the kill shot was
To use another name of a diss track, Eminem's diss track. Kill shot.
Kill shot.
Yeah.
But the kill shot was a song called Not Like Us.
Correct.
So that is and it's up for a Grammy. He's up for many Grammys because of Not Like Us. And so on this song, he calls Drake a pedophile, okay? And so Drake has now sued over the release of that track, Not Like Us. He is not, to be clear, he has not sued Kendrick Lamar. He is suing Universal Music Group.
Yes, his record label.
His record label and Kendrick Lamar's record label. They're both with UMG. He filed a lawsuit last Tuesday accusing the company of defamation by allowing the song to be published, claiming it had spread the false and malicious narrative that he is a pedophile. In response, Universal, which has been Drake's label for more than a decade, said, quote, "Not only are these claims untrue, but the notion that we would seek to harm the reputation of any artist, let alone Drake, who's like their biggest artist, is illogical. It is also accused the star of trying to silence Lamar by taking their rap battle to the courts." So now, the part of this that I want to talk to you about is everybody understands that UMG is big. That's the machine.
Correct.
You have an artist now who's trying to sue the machine because they're claiming that they were a part of a campaign to intentionally inflict harm on him and defame him. How do you think this plays out? Because right now we're living in a world in which Drake is getting crushed. He is getting crushed by hip hop fans everywhere because they're like, no, we want you to make more diss tracks and you to take it to him in the booth. You are taking it to the courts. And that's not how we operate in hip hop. What do you make of this?
Well, and Drake even went beyond that. What he accused UMG is essentially this silent promotion,
yes,
of the track through YouTubers and other influencers.
Bots. Right. Yep.
Yeah, all these bots and all this, you know, AI that's now been used as part of this process. So it goes beyond just the normal allowing this type of defamatory information to be out there. I mean, listen, it's compelling. We're talking about it, and we're not the only one talking about it. It's
one of the stories of the year.
It is, for sure. And, I mean, there's a long history of rap battles. I was just Googling to see if there were any other rap battles that wound up in court. I can't.
This is the first one ever.
I can't think of any, right?
Which makes him look small.
It does make him look small. I mean, listen, I'm a Drake fan, and so it's not good.
And I'm a Kendrick Lamar fan.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, it's.
I mean, you got to hold the L sometimes, and which is the reason why this is in court. If he never took the L the way that he did, this would never be a thing.
I think you're right. Or Drake somehow believes he's going to get some type of promotional benefit out of this ongoing litigation, right? It certainly elevated Drake in a way that he's kind of hasn't been in the last few years, right?
This has hurt him.
You think this has hurt him?
It absolutely has. When you say Lindsay, this has hurt him in a major way.
It's hurt his cool factor, and I think that's the biggest
in the
thing.
Rap world.
In the rap world, he was already on thin ice as it is, but then getting called out by the
biggest
the chosen one.
Yeah.
in our generation,
the guy that is deemed as the street guy that actually has a lot of integrity because he has a consciousness. Like, when you look at the songs that Kendrick Lamar, like, the underestimation from Drake towards Kendrick Lamar is where he messed up. He thought, I'm the biggest guy in the world, can't nobody beat me, yeah, yeah. Kendrick Lamar is a conscious rapper. He's not just a gangster rapper. He raps about everything. The guy's done songs with Beyonce. Like, he's doing the Super Bowl. He did an entire soundtrack. He was the one that curated the soundtrack for Black Panther. So for Drake to go to this links, he massively underestimated his opponent.
I'm going to have to listen to more Kendrick Lamar.
You have to.
Yeah, no, listen. I've been listening to a lot of Juice WRLD lately, which sadly.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace, yeah. Though they continue to put out an album a year. That's crazy. Guy dies at 24. They put out three albums in 3 years. I mean, I think that's so interesting. The litigation itself, at least what I've read, is going to be tough, right?
And every legal scholar I've read on this topic, and I've been reading this for months because there was rumors that he may sue. I have not seen one story published where they're like, yeah, he's got good standing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering, the other question is whether there's some alternative motive.
Well,
right? Now, this, you know, you never know, right? This goes back to.
Some people
you
say he wants to get out of his contract.
Yeah, you know, there has, obviously, rappers have wound up in court. TLC famously filed bankruptcy, and TLC was not bankrupt, TLC wanted out of their record deal, right? And they used a portion of the bankruptcy code that allows you to terminate contracts as a tool to get out of their at the time their onerous record contract. You wonder if Drake wants a new record deal, right?
That's what people are speculating.
Yeah, I think that probably makes sense.
But UMG holds the cards here. Like, why would they? I'm going to help you out now that you're suing me. I don't see how Drake looks better. How does Drake get into a better situation through all of this?
Yeah,
UMG.
You know what? There are lawyers that believe that, you know, particularly litigators, right? What do they say to a hammer? Everything's a nail, right? You know, some people will say if you put enough litigation pressure on someone, they'll negotiate some type of deal that will give him some type of contractual relief. I'm not that kind of lawyer. I reformed litigator. I tried a number of cases early in my career. I find out that, you know, that negotiations generally tend to work better. I mean, it sounds like his credibility, you know, that he's not only hurt his
he says his reputation has been basically irreparably harmed.
Drake has. Well, Drake by the accusations
of being a pedophile.
Yeah, no one wants to be accused of that.
No.
I mean, that's a very serious accusation. But by not accusing – first off, I did read the song. You know, he doesn't come out and say it, you know, as
much
but
in a roundabout way,
yeah,
he does.
Yeah, I mean, and you get in defamation claims. Mm-hmm. First off, Drake's a public figure. You can say a lot more about a public figure than in the United States, at least for now, though our current president –
Why?
Why can you say more about a public
figure? Yeah, why is that?
Well, it's the American kind of law. That's an interesting that you would, you know, it's the way we view statements about a public figure. We say when you consciously become a celebrity, you should be subject to kind of, I don't want to say more abuse, but certainly more aggressive statements, right, as opposed to an ordinary person, right?
And they're like public domain, right? It's kind of like your people have a piece of you. They feel entitled to a piece of you.
Right. And people can have opinions about celebrities, right? And those opinions can kind of go a long way as opposed to kind of the ordinary citizen. Also, if it's art, you get a lot more license. So he's going to say, listen, this was a part of my art, right? I wasn't going in a newspaper and making a specific statement. Defamation's also very hard to prove, period. But like in England, right, the defamation laws are very different, and public figures have a lot of protection for defamatory statements.
One of the things that I think that, and I just don't understand the math on Drake's logic with this is, I get, man, if you're being called a pedophile and the world is dancing to the song and it's nominated for a Grammy, that you're gonna wear that for the rest of your life. But with that being said, in a song he dropped before this even came out, the day prior, he made a claim that Kendrick Lamar had been molested as a kid, which wasn't true. He made a claim that Kendrick Lamar beats on his wife, which everybody's saying that's not true. And he also made the claim that one of Kendrick Lamar's kids wasn't actually his child. And so if you're playing dirty and someone then says this about – I mean, what's the standing there? Like, you said these things and everybody's saying, dude, do you not understand that you're playing with fire here?
There was an old statement with regard to newspapers. You don't go to war with – don't go to a war of words with an organization that buys ink by the gallon, right? That was – and this is a very similar situation. You don't want to go to war with someone who has a microphone like either of these two have, right? And frankly, you know, these rap battles have somewhat stayed – even in the early days of NWA and Public Enemy, the rap battles were fairly –
they were tame.
Not tame. They could be aggressive.
They could be aggressive, but it never got super serious, and then we had the Biggie Tupac thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Which is, you know, that was obviously a big one. Wound up in death, right? I mean, that was a rap battle. Didn't wind up in the courts. It wound up, you know, we don't know who killed either of those two. But, you know, those rap battle certainly had. And certainly Tupac was shot specifically because of because of one.
It's kind of up in the air because he got into it with the guy at the Tyson fight and all this other stuff, whatever. Real quick, and then Lindsay wants to chime in before we go to a break.
Oh.
My last, I'm trying to get my train of thought. You don't think that he wins this?
The lawsuit?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
I mean, again, it depends how you define winning. If he has an agenda that we don't know about, say.
I think part of the agenda is he doesn't want the song performed at the Super Bowl. And I don't know.
That'll be interesting. I mean, I'm going to be watching on TV this year. I'm not going to be in New Orleans. I'm interested to see that. I would say this. It's going to be hard. What was it? 2 years ago, it was Dre, Eminem, and who was the third? 50 Cent. So it's Kendrick Lamar has a – to me, that was the best
Super Bowl. Dre, Snoop, Mary J. Blige, all those.
That was the best halftime show I've seen live at a Super Bowl.
Did you see Usher last year? Or was it last year or was it 2 years ago?
Usher was last year, yeah. Way better than Usher.
Okay. Well, this is going to be better. You want to say
Rihanna
something?
Rihanna was the pinnacle, or Beyonce, if you want to. But I did want to kind of put something in the background information, because I don't know if you guys mentioned this, that Drake's contract with UMG is also up for renegotiation in 2025. He's been under that deal since
2009. Yeah, he's trying to get out of it. Yeah, we mentioned that. Yep.
And so I'm also thinking with, like, the Taylor Swift stuff in the background, too, and you mentioned Juice WRLD and control over your masters. He's probably one of those artists that has the most to gain or lose when it comes to whatever that next step is for business, because he has so many hit records that have already existed that can be reissued in different ways going forward.
Well, let's go
back.
Don't
mess with me, right?
Let's go back to Prince, who literally turned himself into a symbol so that his record company couldn't promote his records, right? And, as much as there is a long history of rap battles, there is a long history of record companies fighting with their artist and vice versa, right? Yeah. Now I was involved in the Prince case, and the one thing that came out of that, I think I was quoted in Billboard magazine, I said it's sports without unions. Music industry is the most exploitative industry I have ever seen. And I say that even, and you and I have talked about the NCAA, and I would say NCAA is a close second, at least until the NIL and allowing these professional athletes to get paid. But it's brutal. And when they get big, they have these lifetime contracts, right, that go, go back to Ray Charles and all these great artists that were literally – they were either tied up by their manager or tied up by their record label.
All right, coming up with Steve Silton. He's staying in studio hanging out with us here on The Lake Show. The news from the afternoon that Donald Trump, President Trump, is going to order the release of the JFK, RFK, and MLK assassination files. We get to that next year on The Lake Show. Steven Silton, Colson O'Connor joining us here in studio. We were talking about Drake and UMG the last segment. Now we turn our attention to the news of the day involving Donald Trump. According to reports, he's going to order the release, or he orders the release. He signed the executive order to release more JFK, RFK, and MLK assassination files. Your thoughts on that?
I mean, we'll see if it happens, right?
Yep.
Lindsay, I think, correctly pointed out during the break that he said he was going to do this during his first term, too, and it didn't really follow through with it. And the question is whether the release is going to be limited of some kind or going to be a complete release. But if he does, right, I mean, one of two things could happen. It could be, the Al Capone vaults where we're, we have – all these news organizations kind of delving into this material, and it turns out to be much to do about nothing. That the Occam razor, that the story that was reported really is what happened. Or there could be some really revelatory information, right? And obviously, MLK and RFK are a little lower on the conspiracy kind of spectrum as did JFK. There's probably no bigger speculation and conspiracy than the assassination of JFK. I mean, there's been movies made. Mainstream feature movies made about that. There's been obviously two major commissions. We had the Warren Commission. Then we had the Assassination Commission that actually a local judge, Judge Jack Thunheim, was on, which essentially, delved into this, led, in some respects for posterity. So it's possible there could be some massive revelations from this. And it's possible, you know, that obviously a speculation of the fact that either the mob or the CIA, a government agency, participated in the assassination, right, would be something that our country would have to come to grips with in a real significant way. So, you know, I don't know.
This is going to get interesting.
It's going to get interesting. It's going to get interesting. I mean, if it leads to
– even the MLK situation.
Right.
So how do I put this? As an African-American man who attended the most known and the only all historically black college for men, Morehouse College. There's only one in the world. I went there. You feel a certain way about black leaders. Martin Luther King Jr. is our most famous alum.
For sure.
And it's not close. And we've got a lot of prestigious names that went there. I bring this up because someone that's still living, I think potentially, you talk about their reputation. I've been seeing a little bit more lately about a possible role that Jesse Jackson could have had in this. Jesse Jackson was, you know, he was mentored by Martin Luther King Jr. He was
at the assassination.
A big name in the civil rights movement.
Yes. He was on the balcony.
He was on the balcony.
Yep.
There are things that I have seen here in the last month or so that is speaking to the, I guess he was envious of Martin Luther King Jr., of his fame, that is speaking to the, I guess he was envious of Martin Luther King Jr., of his fame and him getting a lot of the shine, and that Jesse Jackson, allegedly, I'm going to say allegedly, was an informant.
Really?
Yes. Well, we know this for a fact, okay, that the most well-known African-American photographer during the civil rights movement, I think it's Ernest Withers, I think is his name. He was an FBI informant. He was responsible. He was part of the entourage with Martin Luther King Jr. He went to all the different marches. He went to all the rallies. You talk about African-American history and it being documented through photos. He is the guy. He died in 2007, I believe. And his name is definitely going to be in these reports because it's already kind of funneled and trickled out. But the Jesse Jackson angle, dude, that would cut deep.
That would cut deep. I mean, you couldn't have a more esteemed alumni of Morehouse than Martin Luther King, because there's probably no more esteemed African-American leader
in the world,
in the history.
In the history,
right? And you could put Thurgood Marshall and Barack Obama and John Lewis, right?
Nobody touches Martin Luther King Jr.
No.
We've had a lot of great alums in all various ways of life. Maynard Jackson, Spike Lee, Samuel Jackson, Edwin Moses, but the Attorney General. There's so many. David Satcher. There's so many.
Yeah, but
he's the man.
Yeah, he is the
he's the Mount Rushmore, and it's his face times all the guys. 100%.
100%. So, I mean, listen, if there was a complicity of another civil rights leader like a Jesse Jackson, right? That would be tough. I hope that's not the case, right? Because and listen, every single orc community, right, including mine, has to at times come to grips with the internal damage that we all cause ourselves, right?
100%.
And that is
100%. We saw with the Black Panther Party,
yep,
how Fred Hampton, those guys were set up. We saw it with Malcolm X, the setup there. Like, it's – let me say this, and I hope that this is not necessarily true about Jesse Jackson. But if – I would not be surprised. I don't know. I don't know why I'm jaded that way. I feel like there, something's not right, and it's going to happen. They've talked about it for years that after Martin was shot and he was down and people are panicking and looking, and that he's like putting Martin's blood on his shirt and all this. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely was more of a self-promoter, yep. Right? I was never a Jesse Jackson fan, and I never really understood why, right? Like, it was just one of those things. I mean, he ran for president, what, in 1980 or 1990. I was on college campuses and very active in Democratic politics at the time. He was all over the place, and he never really compelled me. He always had that a little – and obviously he said some things that I thought were, you know, were much different than the leadership that, let's say, Martin Luther King gave. But if that would be an unbelievably revelatory type of thing. I mean, who knows? I mean, this is, you know, transparency, you know, is what is the greatest disinfectant is transparency, right? And this could lead to some really interesting introspective in a lot of different communities, right? Yeah. Again, if the CIA was somehow complicit in one way or the other, right, which has long been the speculation with regard to JFK, wow, how does that organization continue in the same capacity? And who knows? I mean, this, you know, what Trump's agenda is with regard to the release of this information.
So,
and let's see if it happens.
So rank them again. Rank them one more time for me in terms of, like, the interest level.
Well, it's JFK.
Mm-hmm.
For sure now that you've just stated that, it's MLK, and then it's RFK. I mean, it's crazy that they're all known by their initials, right?
It's going to be interesting, man, in the whole COINTELPRO program and everything that was going on in the 50s and 60s with all the intelligence back then. That's a big deal.
Well, and, you know, there's no question that Martin Luther King was under almost constant,
yes,
FBI surveillance,
yep,
right?
Yep.
That has been all but acknowledged under J. Edgar Hoover.
Yes.
So if how the FBI, right, could be complicit in this too, could be just as interesting, right?
Yep. Like, yep.
You know, it's a – could they have known that, you know, that there were assassination kind of, you know, attempts, right?
I mean,
in some respects, it was an interesting Sopranos episode where the FBI had his house bugged and found out that his house was going to flood. And they were – you know, the FBI was sitting around – this is obviously way lower in a more kind of silly area. Should we somehow find a way to tell the Sopranos that their water heater was going to break, right? If the FBI was sitting around and they have evidence that, oh, should we inform the Martin Luther King camp that, by the way, there's an assassination attempt coming? I mean, mm-hmm. It would be unbelievable.
Yeah. Hey, can you hang out for one more segment?
Of course.
All right, so we'll take a break. We're way over. Need to take a look at the local weather with Chris Schaefer, and then we'll get into another topic, a rather interesting topic that Lindsay wanted to bring to the forefront. I want to get Steve's take on it as well. We do that next year on The Lake Show. All right, The Lake Show, Steven Silton. You go by both, though. Oh, you only go by Steven?
No, I go by Steve.
Oh, you go by Steve.
Yeah, Steven if I'm in trouble.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Anyone who calls me Steven, I'm looking.
What is it on Twitter or X? Isn't it Steven?
I know it is, but I'm trying to be professional.
I got you.
Yeah.
I got you. All right.
Yeah.
So I want Lindsay to set up this topic because she approached me with it earlier today. I think it's a very interesting topic about an experience that she had with going to the movies and kind of some thoughts that she had that spun out of it. So Lindsay, we're going to react to what,
yeah,
what you have to,
yeah,
say.
Yeah, we'll see how good of a job I do in setting this table. We're going to eat,
pressure's
but
on.
We just might be a little bit messy here and there. But I went to a movie last night, and I'm not a person that goes to a ton of movies because it costs like $40 every time you go.
I didn't
there,
know
right?
People your age knew what a movie was.
Oh, come on. I'm a millennial. I'm not one of these Gen Z kids who only knows how to scroll up on the phone. I went to and bought Harry Potter at midnight, just like the next best kid who was born in the 90s. So give me a little bit of credit here. But when I go have experiences, I try to look at just the different forces that are at work, right? When I sat down to go see One of Them Days, which is a new Issa Rae film that has SZA in it, that has my girl Kiki Palmer. It's about these two girls that are trying to get their rent money secured because they gave it away to one of their boy toys who was starting a t-shirt line. Great investment opportunity. So the previews there, they say a lot about where people are trying to advertise and where they're trying to push you. There were two superhero movies, both Marvel, and they were both spinoff Marvel.
So these are Pre-movie trailers.
Pre-movie trailers, which used to take place at the end of movies. That's why they're called trailers. I did my research on all this stuff today. But it was two superheroes and four horror films.
So wait, there were six?
There were six.
That's too much.
And they've done research on how many is too much. Apparently that's nine, where people start to get a little bit antsy in their pants, or they're saying there's too many trailers. And so it's usually within that six range. But I was thinking, who are they trying to target, and what are they trying to help them feel? Because apparently when they choose these trailers, sometimes it's about a deal like, if we're going to show you Marvel movies, we're going to do the trailers for Disney. We're going to give you Frozen 2. We're going to give you everything. And then sometimes there's discretion for the theater managers and everything else. But when you have the four quadrants that they divide cinema audiences into, women under 25, men under 25, women over 25, and men over 25, I would say that the movie I was seeing last night was probably aimed at women under 25. Why are there so many horror movies being directed towards us in this time?
They're the only movies that are going to be shown on a big screen, right? I mean, it's just my wife and I actually were talking about this, right? Because when we were young, it was kind of the inception of the superhero movies. And we had young kids going through it.
I bet your daughter's educated you on this.
And she is. My daughter works in the film industry, right?
And it wasn't legit until Iron Man came out, because they had a couple of Spider-Mans before that were, but Iron Man's what really took off.
I, no question. And we used to have to wait, like, for 3 or 4 months between these superhero movies, right? And they were a big deal. The family would go. We would know what was there. And we would see the previews before that. I mean, those are the movies that sell in the big theater, right? In horror movies and the superhero movies sell. That is a niche movie. I've seen the preview of it. I could tell that it was, it had some kind of cult kind of capability. So
one of them days.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's what I kind of enjoyed, because it just feels like all these films are so consequential. We got to save the universe, or there's a dystopian nightmare to help navigate through. They just needed to get their rent money for the day. I enjoyed like having an indie film that was just like you could run into that story down the street. But those aren't big budget films.
No, and they're very hard to get. Very hard to get kind of big screen type of time, right? It's very hard to release those onto the big screen, because frankly, people don't come to them. People come to the superhero movies. They come to horror movies. Those are the movies that frankly, as they try to get people back into the theater. I mean, I think COVID impacted movie theaters probably more than any other kind of entertainment outlet in a way, because people are already moving away from it, right?
Yep. We're streaming and all this
other
stuff.
They're streaming and the big TVs everybody has in their house. It's just as in many enjoyable of an experience at home. I enjoy, I come from a time when that's really all we had, right? I mean, videos were really just coming into play when I was in high school and college, and I still like going and experiencing something communally. I think there's value in that,
but there's a viscerality I think that movie theaters provide that you can't get even with the biggest speaker system you possibly could in your house. Like, there's the communal aspect, but I feel like that means less to people than it did previously. Like, you kind of want your little pod, and I want to have my blanket, and I want to be alone, and I want to be able to have my reactions to myself.
Well, now, of course, it used to be you used to go to a movie theater. You didn't know who you were going to sit next to, right?
Right. And now you choose.
Now you choose. You have your own seat, right? They're big seats now. Like, it's the experience itself has been elevated. I mean, it's an interesting thing. It'll be interesting to see how many movies are continuing to be released theatrically. I mean, I think there's always going to be, at least right now. But, at some point, these superhero movies have got to be. I'd be interested if there's any listeners with young kids at home. I mean, there's like 20 superhero movies a year. I mean, how do you pick and choose which ones to go to?
When was the last time you were in the movie theater?
Well, okay, this is a good story. So my daughter's was a producer on a movie that had theatrical release. And my daughter, who's a pretty ambitious young lady, called local theaters because she had some of her own short films in the Twin Cities Film Fest, and was able to get this film called The Critic with Ian McKellen, Sir Ian McKellen, Oscar winner Ian McKellen. Yeah, legend. Into theaters in Minnesota. So my wife and I went, right? And it's now the Mann Theater. It used to be Carasota. That's kind of our theater of choice. So she called the theater itself and said, listen, I'm, you know, an alumni of the Twin Cities Film Fest. I've got my first kind of feature film, and they played it for a couple weekends. And we went there and watched a film. It's a very good film if anyone hasn't seen it. It's Ian McKellen plays a kind of pre-World War II movie critic who, you know, is gay and, you know, the Nazis are kind of – he's in Britain, but the fascists are kind of bearing down on him. But at the end of the movie, my wife and I were literally videotaping the credits, and the people were coming in to clean up, and we're like, who are these crazy people videotaping the credits of the
film connoisseurs.
Yeah, film connoisseurs.
Who truly understand the Nicole Kidman meme when they play. Have you heard that thing too?
I've done the same thing on my phone. I got my name in the credits here on my phone.
Yes. Listen, it was a big deal. She actually did the credits, so she was there. She put herself in twice.
Twice,
because she was in charge of the credits. So that's the last movie I did. Thank you for asking me that question. That was it was fun to tell. So it was fun to watch.
What have you come up for, with?
What's the last movie you saw?
Oh, Mr. Hit Me Up.
What?
Mr. Hit Me Up?
Yeah. It's the movie I was in.
Well, you were in it.
Yeah. I just told you I filmed the credits.
You were in it?
Yeah. Local film.
Mr. Hit Me Up.
Local directorship.
Is there like a local Oscars?
Where can I watch Mr. Hit Me Up?
It's not like on streaming.
Okay.
It's on streaming.
Yeah.
Look it up. Tell your listeners how you can hear.
The movie theater that I went to go see it at was, they had a deal with the out in Woodbury.
Mr. Hit Me Up 2 is coming out. Are you going to be in that?
No.
You can watch Mr.
Contract negotiations.
You can watch Mr. Hit Me Up. Everyone should do this on Peacock and Tubi.
See?
Tubi, great.
I told you, streaming. I just told you.
You're holding up Peacock. They're struggling. They need a title like that.
You thought I was lying. He thought I was like you. He was like, you're not.
Is that the top of your IMDb page then?
No,
I am
going to buy and set up an IMDb
page. Yeah. I was in Hard Knocks.
Eventually. Look at you.
Really?
For a brief few seconds. My voice was.
I'm go. Again, I was a part of a movie that is going to be released on February 11th and shown here.
I didn't look at it yet. I'm going to be in another movie this year too.
Really? What movie is that?
This is a documentary.
What documentary?
I can't talk about it right now.
Oh, God. Okay. But I'm nervous.
You're in a documentary?
Anyway. It's a movie. I want to get the name right. But I was Confessions of a CEO about Tom Gigax, who started and ran Tires Plus, a very good friend, long time client of mine. And I was interviewed for it. And the initial cut that I saw 18 months ago, I was in it. I'm a little scared I'm going to be on the cutting room floor.
Maybe directors for all those DVD menus. It's the only way you could find it, right? Get a director's cut with the commentary in the background.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe if there's deleted scenes, I'll be in the deleted scenes. So we'll see when I'm at the opening.
The opening for the red carpet. Hey, thanks for coming to the studio, man.
Hey, Henry, always great to be here.
We're running way late. Let's take a quick break, come back, and we'll wrap up like one more minute of the Lake Show. Steve Stilton's the best. You can talk to him about anything. He's probably going to the Masters here in a couple of months. I assume he is. He brought me back a hat last year. It's a badass Masters hat. It is. It's nice.
You can save money for those souvenirs because I don't think they've changed their food prices ever. I think you can get like a pimento sandwich.
The merch
for $1.
Wasn't too bad either, I don't think.
They understand how to grow the game, I guess. Inclusivity, that's what I always think of when I think of the Masters.
Well, when I think about the pricing, you saw the Twins, you've heard the news that the Twins are up for sale.
I have heard.
Well, the Ishbia brothers allegedly are very interested in purchasing the Twins. They did the rollback pricing this year with the Phoenix Suns.
I did see that.
Yeah, that's affordable. That'll
lure you back to the Target Center on random nights that you'll never have a show once a blue moon.
I'm already there.
You're already there. More season tickets?
I'm a season ticket holder.
I know you are. So you're going to buy more? Like, there has to be a more incentive for you to invest.
No. I'm already a season ticket holder.
You're going to ask for something.
No, I got every single game. So, I mean,
not even like a.
You mean trying to move down to a different area?
Rally towel.
Nah, I mean, if I'm not there as a fan, I'm there as a media member.
Let's do something about that parking downtown.
I would go. Parking has now it's up to like $20, I think, each game.
Or
close to it, from what I've been told.
I do my best to ride my anxiety to come in here at 4 o'clock on the dot. I'd usually be here earlier, but I refuse to pay more than $8 to park down here if I can help it.
Something, ain't it?
It's yes. Yes, it is.
Oh, man. You got, you're going to be, are you going to be here through the shift that I'm working?
Probably.
Okay.
I might be the only thing keeping you on the air. Who knows?
Well, don't mess it up because I don't want Dave St. Peter in the
crew
getting mad at me.
Well, I know there's one thing we can't mess up, and that is Twins coverage.
Yeah, don't do that.
I'm not going to do it. I don't want Dave St. Peter to know who I am.
I don't want... Brad Lane looking at me like, what's going on? Hey, I'm just here with you, man.
Right.
I'm not trying to put pressure on you.
It's fine.
You're good.
Shaletta's prepared me for that.
Yeah, is there a Shaletta show leading up to? Oh, yeah, it's just all Twins.
It's all Twins?
Okay. It'll be fun. Regular show tomorrow night, everybody. I will be at Twins Fest on Saturday. Closing out Twins Fest, me and Corey Provis. That'll be fun. All right, that's going to wrap up the show tonight. Thanks to Stephen Silton. Thanks to Matthew Collar. Thanks to Heather Rule. And thank you to Lindsey Brown. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow night right here on The Good Neighbor. News Talk 830 WCCO.